listening to Real Talk on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
You're on Reality Check Radio. It's Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. Well, we haven't heard from this next blessed guest for quite a while. He's a natural health practitioner, expert, but I don't think he'd use that phrase because he's humble. Gary Moller. Good morning, Gary.
Well, good morning to you as well, Rodney. And it's an absolute pleasure to be on this program with you.
Oh, you're so kind. Now, you and I are going to be talking about a man thing.
Yes.
Prostrate. What the hell is your prostrate?
Well,
and what do I have one, and why?
Yes, well, to be absolutely correct, it's called prostate.
Not prostrate, like lying down on the ground. Prostate.
No, though, for some, we may feel that that's actually the problem. But prostate. And okay. It's a little gland deep down below a man's penis and testicles. And it plays an important role in man's health and also for sexual function and so on. Yes.
We're big kids listening here. What does it actually do?
Its main role, as I understand it, is to produce seminal fluid.
Okay.
Yes. So when we think about it, if we don't use it, we lose it. It's like any organ. We should use it regularly and put it to good use, and then we strengthen it.
There you go, okay. Ladies.
I'd like to just put that
challenge.
Putting that forward as a starter is like any organ. If you use it regularly, it grows stronger and maintains health. It's like a muscle or your bone or your brains.
So, to be precisely clear, using it means ejaculation.
Yes, by whatever means. We won't go into detail.
No, got it.
Just understand that.
Honey,
it's an organ that's designed
I'm
to be.
Just with. Exercising my prostate, is what you can say, right? Now.
And Rodney, never in public, please.
No. Tell me, why is it that you have. You must have a lot of glands, a lot of things in your body. So why does this little gland give us grief? Is there something defective? Or like why such a lot of attention on prostate? I mean, there must be things in your throat. There must be things, you know, under glands under your armpits. But it's the prostate that gets this attention.
Well,
is there a bit of a defectiveness there
or
weakness?
I can't really answer that question, Rodney. Perhaps somebody else might be able to, but certainly any organ in the body with age can become dysfunctional, and some organs are more vulnerable to certain things going awry within the body, the presence of toxins such as lead, cadmium, arsenic, and so on. So there is differences in sensitivity. Certainly, prostate issues have become more of an issue, I think, because, it's an aging population. And also, there's the factor of nutrient deficiencies and the ubiquitous toxins that can have a detrimental effect on one's health and certainly is kind of obviously seen in the prostate. And by the way, if the prostate is becoming dysfunctional, it has quite serious implications for a man's health. The inability to pee freely and in large volumes, and also to hold his pee. So when we're looking at prostate, we also need to be looking at bladder control.
Okay.
So those two things, So as young men, first of all, we could hold a large volume of urine in our bladder, sleep through the night, and then let it flow like the Niagara Falls.
Yes.
As we get older.
I remember those days.
Yes, that's right. And so do I. And to a large degree, Rodney, I've reclaimed those days.
I've got to get up every night at 2 or 3 o'clock and have a pee.
Yeah.
And to be fair, it's a good-sized pee.
Yep.
And so am I got the problem?
I think that's fine. It's probably a reflection of your relaxed lifestyle, Rodney, these days, along with your beautiful organic vegetables. So that's probably helping. I think having to get up in the middle of the night once, that's fine. But if it's every couple of hours and if it's for a pathetic dribble, then there's definitely a problem. Rodney, when I was in my late 40s, early 50s, I was getting up 2 or 3 times a night.
Oh, wow.
I didn't like going to the public urinal because it was sort of like a bit of a strangulated pee. And so it was of considerable concern to me. I'm now in my early 70s. And I had a beer last night. And I slept right through the night.
Wow. Okay?
Which was cool. I'm really quite proud of that.
When you're having this pee problem, you were getting up 2 or 3 times in the night and you just do a dribble, empty your bladder and then hop back into bed. 2 hours later, got to get up, and a little dribble. That would be infuriating.
I think half of your listeners over the age of 60, the men, and by the way, what we're talking about has some relevance to women as well. Okay, when we start talking about the solutions, the health based solutions to this problem, whether you're male or female, the same ideas apply. So just bear that in mind for the female listeners. What we're talking about is almost universal in men as they get older, as they get into their 60s and 70s, of having to get up frequently and to pee a relatively small volume.
I remember.
Yeah.
And I think it was 1963, being a young little boy.
Yeah.
And we undertook an expedition from Rangura to Auckland for a cousin's wedding. And Uncle Gordon came. And one of the cars was my dad's 1936 Ford V8. And Uncle Gordon would have to stop. We had to stop the car because we had Uncle Gordon with us. And we had to stop. God knows, but to a little boy, it seemed like every 10 minutes stop and Uncle Gordon would get out and have a pee and hop back in the car. We'd go another 10 minutes, stop for Uncle Gordon, have a pee. And none of us kids could understand this Uncle Gordon stopping for a pee. And so obviously that was because, like you say, when you're young, you sleep like a pig and then you get up and you do this pee that is just glorious in the morning. And I've never had a pee like that once I got old. Is the prostate enlarged or something and pushing in on the bladder?
There's a number of things that go on. If we talk about the bladder first, the bladder is it's a muscular bag.
Yep.
A healthy bladder will relax and take a large volume, and then when it's time to empty, then it can contract forcefully, and the urine is removed, is peed out. Also, the urethra needs, which is a muscular, that's the tube through which the urine goes, that needs to be able to relax and contract. It's got a valve, basically, that opens and closes. And if there are mineral or nutrient imbalances, and specifically calcium and magnesium are the main ones, if they are deficient, excessive, or unbalanced, then the bladder and the sphincters, or the valves of the urethra, will be dysfunctional in their ability to contract and relax. So, for example, if the bladder wall is excessively tense, then the person won't be able to hold much urine at all. So they'll get that sense of urgency. If the valves of the urethra can't maintain a contraction, then there will be that urgency where there'll be incontinence, where some of the urine will dribble. And likewise, when one needs to pee, the muscular wall of the urethra needs to relax so that there can be a free flow. So that all works together. The other is that if there is a chronic infection, such as a yeast infection in the bladder, then that can cause irritation and inflammation, which will create a sense of burning or urgency. But also, if there is inflammation, you have swelling, which means that then the flow, the ability to empty the bladder through the urethra, is going to be constricted. So there's a number of things that come together. In addition, if the prostate gland is inflamed, it swells and pushes against the urethra, which then doesn't. So it's like a rock sitting on a hose and strangulating it. Okay, so that's the problem with an enlarged prostate, in that it can cause a blockage or the inability to empty the bladder freely.
If you're pre-diabetic type 2, you pee a lot too, right?
Yes. And if we're thinking about your uncle Gordon. First of all, was he drinking too much?
Alcohol or water?
Well, could be anything. Of course, if you drink too much, you're going to go to the toilet a lot.
Okay? I think that's my problem. I drink a lot of black tea.
Well, you should still be able to hold it, of course, so that you build up a big volume and then basically empty it like kaboom, okay, ideally. Now, can I also, just as an aside, ask, what was Uncle Gordon's occupation, Rodney?
Well, he was long retired, but he had been a motor mechanic.
Okay, there you go, righto. Remember I mentioned toxins. Now, so I was visiting a family friend out on the farm, about my age, but not well. And we were talking about health, and we got onto the subject of prostate. And they live on a road where I think it's just a straight road for about 30 kilometres. It's a very long road, dotted with farms. And I said to him that prostate disease is very common amongst farmers. So it's not so if we are to look at various occupations, men who work with their hands, and in particular farmers, and I'll add mechanics, builders, they tend to have unusually high rates of prostate disease. Now, I'm just saying that from my clinical experience of the thousands of people I've dealt with over the years, is that I have an unusually high number of men, such as farmers and tradies, who end up with prostate problems. Of course, there are accountants and politicians and so on who have prostate problems, but farmers, for example. Now, so my mate went quiet for a minute. He said, yeah, when I think about it, they have a men's health group, support group for farmers. And he said, Gary, you're right. Down the entire line, he's talking about his road, I can't think of a single one, single farmer, we're talking about the men, of course, who hasn't got a prostate problem. Okay, now, the common factor when we do the testing is we find toxins like arsenic, cadmium, manganese, mercury, aluminium, and so on. These are all incredibly inflammatory. And in addition to being incredibly inflammatory, they block nutrients such as zinc and selenium. And most men know that selenium and zinc are important for the prostate. Okay. Mm-hmm. If you are exposed to a toxin which blocks selenium and zinc, then straight away the prostate is going to become inflamed and dysfunctional. And in addition to that, there would be barely a single Kiwi of any age in New Zealand who hasn't got a problem with selenium and zinc. So these are your common factors. And by the way, stress. I mentioned accountants, politicians. What's in common with a farmer? Well, guess what? They're all stressed. And with stress ultimately comes adrenal exhaustion. And one of the primary roles of the adrenals is to regulate inflammatory processes within the body. If the adrenals are weak, then there may be a reduction in the response to inflammation, the production of hormones like cortisol, okay? And if that is the case, then inflammation throughout the body can go gangbusters.
Mm.
And guess what, Rodney? That was the primary driver of my own bladder and prostate problems in my late 40s. Stress and exhaustion, financial stress, business stress, family stress, and trying to run marathons. Okay. Burned out, exhausted, and guess what? Uncontrolled inflammation, and also combined with a pro-inflammatory diet, which I mistakenly thought was healthy for me.
Gosh, isn't that amazing? Just before we get on to solutions, where does all I have ever heard about the prostate is cancer?
Yeah.
And, get tested, cancer, and get it tested because get cancer and it'll kill you. I have to say, I haven't been to a doctor since COVID. Because I just don't want to. You haven't mentioned prostate cancer.
Well, first of all, think of prostate cancer as the end of the line in the progression of the disease.
I see.
And if you're truly interested in prevention, we have to ask the question, what comes before cancer? In fact, we're talking about all cancers, by the way, whether it's bowel cancer, breast cancer, thyroid cancer, ovarian cancer, cervical cancer, and so on, skin cancer. What comes before cancer? This is why the war on cancer is something which I absolutely will not support. President Richard Nixon, I think he announced the war on cancer in 1972. Trillions of dollars have been spent on cancer research and treatment and so on, and we've got worse cancer rates today than ever before. It just shows that it is an abject failure. And the reason why is because They're looking for cancer treatments and cures after the horse has bolted, okay? And in fact, over the horizon. The testing, the screening that is being done is basically looking for the disease too late in the process. Now, what comes before all of these cancers that I mentioned, and undoubtedly there are more, it's chronic inflammation. So if we were serious about preventing bowel cancer, we would identify all of the 20-something boys and men and women who are having trouble doing number twos, whether it's IBS or constipation or whatever, okay? And we would be dealing with that. We wouldn't be waiting until they're 50 or 60 and there are visible polyps and growths and that.
Goodness me.
Yeah. If we are looking at breast cancer, we would be looking at the women who have breast tenderness with their monthly cycle. And we should be dealing with that. Think of what comes before most breast cancers, breast inflammation, which then progresses to fibrocystic breast disease, which then progresses to cancer. Okay, we need to be, if you think of cervical cancer, a chronic infection of the cervix. If you think of ovarian cancer, monthly ovarian pain, okay? We should be dealing with those things 20, 30, 40 years before. And likewise with a man with prostate cancer. I think it's too late to wait for, the digit test. By the way, I've had that done once many years ago and the doc said, you're clear, Gary. And I said, well, I'd like a second opinion, doc. And so so put the glove on the other hand. Anyway, that's my joke for the day. But here's the thing. By the time you're getting to these advanced states, it becomes more difficult to deal with. The first sign of diminishing...
Well, I've never, ever, ever in my life have heard that.
The only reason why you're hearing it is because you've got Reality Check Radio.
Yeah.
Okay?
I always thought, never knew there was precursors to cancer.
Well, let's just take another example, Rodney, okay? Skin cancer, okay?
Yes.
You've got what comes before skin cancer?
Sunburn.
You've got to be burning the skin, damaging it, irritating it. Okay, sunlight doesn't cause skin cancer. Sunburn causes skin cancer.
And so, what you're saying is there needs to be this irritation.
Irritation and damage, and usually of a on a prolonged basis. Okay, so where there's constant irritation, re-injury, inflammation.
Let's say we've got men listening, wives listening, and the man or the person listening. 40, 50, 60, getting up in the night, peeing, like you were when you're in your 40s and 50s. Mm. That is a sign of prostate disease or ill health affecting the bladder.
Yeah.
It's a precursor, potentially, of cancer.
Yes.
Life-threatening. So, what would you recommend for someone with that symptom, which you're saying is most men?
Yeah. I'll just add one other thing, Rodney,
yes.
Which contributed to my own problems, and that I got, on separate occasions, bladder infections. And the long-term consequence of that was urinary incontinence. In other words, I would have an urgent and uncontrollable need to go to the toilet. Okay, and that is because with the scarring from the infection affecting the urethra, the urethra went from, I guess, a nice pliable silicon tube to being hardened and scarred. And so my urethra would have trouble closing off and stopping urine getting past. So what I'm saying here, Rodney, is that the prevention gets, it's multifactorial. It's a little bit complicated. But it's actually quite easy to unravel, okay?
Because so, ladies get urinary infections readily.
Yes, yes.
And it's not to then be taken lightly.
Not at all. And the long-term consequences can be urinary incontinence. But as I've been able to demonstrate for myself, is that this can be reversed,
okay,
regardless of age. Okay, so now that I'm
peeing in the night once. Would I be a problem? Could be, right?
I think. Well, you're doing very well, Rodney. But the thing is that you want to act now before somebody says, "Houston, we've got a problem." And you're flaming out in a million little bits and pieces. We need to deal with you before you're even anywhere near the launch pad, so to speak. Okay, so let's get in really early, Rodney. Now, you're already doing some of the things well, okay? And you're no longer a politician, so I assume that the stress levels are down. Though
stress is a funny thing, though, isn't it? The funny thing is, I'll be taking the kids somewhere.
Yeah.
And you know how kids are. Oh, I'm doing this, get that, forgot this. And I get stressed by lateness. And I remember taking my little daughter to preschool and being stressed because she would be slow walking along the road and think, I'm going to be late. Then I'd stop and think, it's bloody preschool. What's the matter if she's 5 minutes late? But I've got a thing about being on time. And so I think, funnily enough, I could be in a high-pressure ministerial position and feel perfectly relaxed because the stress had been I'm just as – I can be just as stressed now as I ever was because I stress myself. You know what I mean?
Well, stress stress is important. We must have stress, but it must not be unrelenting stress.
Okay.
We need stress to stimulate and strengthen so many aspects of
so it's like exercise.
You've got to have a break at regular intervals.
Got it.
Yeah. It's like we were talking earlier. Soldiers, you put them at the front line, and as they start to tire, you pull them back and give them time out to regenerate and to become stronger. And then you put them back again. And it's where somebody is bombarded left, right, and center without a break.
Mm-hmm.
The farmer that is constantly worrying about the weather, the health of their animals, the regional council with all of their dictates and so on. It wears people down as opposed to stress that a person can control. And I think that's, when we're talking about stress, it comes down to being in control, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the stress, when you're the cabinet minister, I guess you're the boss, you know, you can control it. But when you're walking to the preschool, your daughter is the one in control.
It's exactly right, actually. You're exactly right.
Stress is definitely a big factor, okay? Because your adrenals regulate inflammation. So for healthy inflammatory responses, you need healthy, strong adrenals. The other that we need to look for in a person is exposure to toxins like your Uncle Gordon. Okay, as a mechanic, we can guarantee, particularly back in those days, he would have had significant amounts of lead in his body, a direct antagonist to selenium and zinc, and also to calcium and magnesium, by the way. So he would have had two things, probably prostate problems and also a bladder that was probably tense, with the result that he'd have to go pee frequently. Okay? Got the idea?
You pick up that those toxins, you pick them up with the hair analysis.
Yes, that to me is my go-to test, where we can pick up. Yes,
I should say to listeners, I'm talking to health naturalist or natural health specialist Gary Moller.
You do have clothes on. I'm not really a naturalist.
No, you've got clothes on. Who, on a previous episode, explained, he said, I used to give multiple tests, but he's now down to just one key test, which is a hair test.
Before we test somebody, we first of all should listen very carefully to the person, and then decide on what is the most appropriate test, rather than just simply throwing a whole lot of tests at somebody and hoping that something might hit pay dirt. So what I always do before I say, yeah, the hair tissue analysis is the right test to do, or this particular blood test, or go get a scan for that, the first thing we need to do is we need to listen very carefully. So your Uncle Gordon, I think the first test I would have done on Uncle Gordon is a test to see whether or not, as a mechanic, he's been sniffing on the fumes and not washing his hands before he eats his lunch. Okay, we need to do that. And then that will most likely would take us, bingo, right into the root cause.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, rather than, and by the way, tests to look for symptoms, like a symptom is like a swollen prostate gland. You got a swollen prostate, so what do we do? Oh, we'll give you some drugs or you need surgery, which is really just giving symptomatic relief, whereas what we should be looking for is the root cause driver of whatever is ailing the person and dealing with that. And by the way, almost without exception, it's the body healing itself, and it's the use of food as the medicine. This takes us right back thousands of years to age-old wisdom, and it works so well. If we just simply enhance the body's ability to heal itself, and that's what the testing I do is for, is to understand where are the nutrient deficiencies, excesses, imbalances, and toxins. Work those out, get them right, and guess what? Your body, it does the work. It does it all. Okay?
So if my Uncle Gordon was tested and he had lead in him, is that irrevocable?
No, it's actually very easy to deal with. The first thing we have to do, though, is we have to make sure that Uncle Gordon isn't putting more of a toxin into his body, okay? Mm-hmm. So that means, for many, it means improving their work practices, work hygiene, so to speak. Um, So we need to make sure that they're not putting their hand back on the hot plate, otherwise you can't heal the wounds. That's the first thing. The second is we work out if there are deficiencies, because everything in the universe is yin yang, black, white, hot, cold, male, female, positive, negative, conservative, liberal. If there's black, there must be white. If it's hot, it's got to be cold. It's the Newtonian physics. So for every reaction, there must be equal and opposite. Okay, and this applies to minerals. So what we do, if we detect that there is lead present in a person, and it'll only be telltale on this testing because lead is osteophilic and it is lipophilic. In other words, it has a love affair with bone and with fat. And the brain being 60% fat, guess what? That's where lead ends up. It ends up in the fat, in the fatty tissues, and also in the bone. So you probably can't see it. And what it does is it is a direct antagonist of calcium, magnesium, selenium, and zinc, and also to a number of other minerals such as iron and manganese. These all have important roles in the body, in the body's biochemistry. Now, it just so happens that, so we look at lead and we think, okay, what are the most powerful antagonists, thinking again of the yin-yang or the seesaw type approach, the positive-negative approach, is that we know that like zinc is a direct antagonist of lead, calcium is a direct antagonist of lead, as are a number of others. If a person is lacking zinc and calcium in our testing, then we will give them more calcium and zinc as supplements and also in foods. And what happens is that if we push those into the body, it pushes the lead out of the body.
Oh, really?
And
so it just makes up the balance, it will actually purge the lead.
Yeah, yes, exactly. And we facilitate that with things like herbs that might assist with detoxification, the use of sauna, antioxidants, special antioxidants that help to protect the body while this process is going on, antioxidants that have a quenching effect on inflammation, supporting the adrenals if there is signs of adrenal fatigue, and so on. So we take a multifactorial approach to this, and with detoxing and by coincidence, hey, selenium, zinc, calcium, magnesium, they're all beneficial for the prostate and for bladder function.
So back when you were in your 40s and 50s suffering this, did you have any toxins?
Mercury. I was eating too much fish. But it wasn't until I was about 55 when I was introduced to the hair tissue testing that I had that revelation as to what was going on. Up until then, I was doing what I thought were all the right things. So as my cardiovascular health, prostate health, bladder health, my mental health, as all of those things deteriorated, essentially I was burned out. I was a burned out athlete, a burned out executive, a burned out father and husband. Okay. So as those health measures deteriorated, I was seeing a cardiologist at the time for an irregular heartbeat too, by the way. So what I did was I moved more and more to a low cholesterol diet. So I cut out red meat, cut out eggs, went to low fat dairy, all of that sort of stuff.
All the bad choices, all the things wrong. that the experts tell us.
Rodney, they were the heart healthy, the right choices.
Still are, right?
At the time. And the more I doubled down on my diet, the more my health kept going down. But of course, it's the old thing. Well, Gary, just as well you made these changes, otherwise you'd be so much worse off. Okay. You got in there just in time, Gary. Okay. Yeah. It's sort of it makes sense, but it's a kind of twisted logic.
And of course, they can't lose.
Of course.
They're always right. Or you cheated. And I think you might have had an egg last week, Gary.
Yeah. Yeah.
You might have succumbed to the egg.
Yeah. Hey, so Rodney, what I did this testing, and first of all, I realized I was eating too much fish, and the fish was the source of toxic levels of mercury. Now, mercury, just like lead, is a direct blocker or antagonist of calcium, magnesium, zinc, and selenium. Okay, so bingo, straight away, there was an issue. The other thing is I went low salt, okay? Mm. And it was when I was doing all the right things. I was basically following what my education had taught me, nutrition science, the heart healthy, the cancer healthy diets and all this sort of stuff. And I realized at about 55, how wrong I was. And so I gradually started reintroducing the butter. We actually helped start the raw milk movement here in the Wellington area.
Oh, well, thank you for that.
Yeah, my youngest child was raised almost his entire life on fresh, raw, full cream A2 milk.
Did you used to get it from Kapiti?
Out in the Wairarapa, out in the Manawatu, Farmer Cedric ended up being prosecuted and financially ruined, and they have since left New Zealand. Yeah.
An elderly couple, right?
An elderly couple, and they were, I think, pushed to absolute emotional breaking point and past their financial. They were ruined.
They supplied me with raw milk. My kids grew up on raw milk.
Yep.
Their raw milk was the most beautiful milk. It took you back to your childhood. You'd drink their milk and you could feel the sun. You could see the grass. A glass of their milk at night and I'd sleep through the night. I made kefir out of it. The kids thrived on it. My mother was beside myself that I was feeding my kids raw milk. She said, "You'll kill them."
Mm.
This farmer had the most beautiful farm. They showed me around the most beautiful cows.
Yes.
The government kept changing the rules to make it harder and harder to sell directly to the public.
Mm.
They employed high-powered lawyers to advise them on what they needed to do to comply with the laws. They spent a great deal of money to comply with the laws. Bureaucrats from MPI turned up and destroyed them.
You're absolutely dead right.
All they were doing was supplying beautiful, wholesome milk to willing and happy customers who thrived.
Well, yes, I know this is...
It's another story, isn't it? It's another story,
Rodney.
But what a disgusting, despicable... And Fonterra? Behind it.
Well, but Rodney, we must keep you safe. And not only that, you must feel safe.
You need your milk pasteurized, homogenized,
well, denaturized. In a lot of ways, you know, well, first of all, if there is regular herd testing for disease, so that there is an assurance that the cows are in good health, and if the milk is collected and distributed hygienically, then the risk of transmission of disease is very, very low. And I can just say, with my family, for probably the best part of 15 years or so, we never fell ill from drinking that milk every day.
Well, I did it with my kids from babies till 10 years old, and then we lost them because of what the government did. I have never felt healthier than drinking a glass of their milk a day. And those bastards. And this lovely, lovely couple.
Well, let's just think about this, and we can relate this to prostate health, okay, and health in general, by the way. When you eliminate the fat from milk, and I'm talking about grass-fed, free-range cows. By the way, I used to milk cows as a young man. That's how I funded my way through uni. So I think I can speak with some authority on cows. But when they are happy, grass-fed cows out in the open, getting sunshine, and when you consume milk that is full cream, and think of butter, cheese, yogurt as well, what you are getting is the fat-soluble vitamins. Now, when you're thinking about prostate health, think of the fat-soluble vitamins, vitamins A, D, E, and K. Now, they have very important immune regulating effects. They are important for healthy collagen, for beautiful, pliable tissue. They're just so important when it comes to prostate and every aspect of health. If you deprive somebody of the fat-soluble vitamins, they are going to get sick. They're not going to thrive. Think of the fat-soluble vitamins. And by the way, they have a yellowish tinge to them. So think of the color of butter, or think of good quality milk and cream. There's a slight yellow tinge. So that's what you look for. Is that slight yellow tinge. Think of the color of a good cheese and so on. So one of the first things that we should be doing is ensuring that we have a diet which is rich in the fat-soluble vitamins. Eggs are also an excellent source, red meat, and in particular liver, wonderful sources of the fat-soluble vitamins and various essential fatty acids.
So you swapped your diet?
Yes. So what I did was one of the other things that happens is that if one goes onto a cholesterol or low cholesterol diet, by default, you tend to increase the amount of carbohydrates. Carbohydrates, sugars, you know, the bread consumption, the cereal consumption goes up, and by default that's sugar, and sugar or carbohydrates, think of grains, they are pro-inflammatory, and also sugars are what yeast, viral and fungal infections absolutely thrive on. Cancer cells love sugar. Going on low-fat, low-animal products diet, by default, you end up having an increase in pro-inflammatory foods.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so you're on a high...
By the other thing is, if you go for the healthy tick,
yeah,
you're also increasing processed foods.
Well, we could. You should read my article, which I've posted on GaryMoller.com, about the rat study, where the rats were fed cornflakes, or divided into three groups. One group was fed rat food, the other was fed cornflakes, and the third ones were fed the cornflakes box. Okay. The rats that lived the longest were the ones that were fed rat food. The ones that survived second were the cardboard eaters, and the ones who died early, the earliest, were the ones that were fed the cornflakes.
Sanitariums say that if you want to run a marathon, you eat cornflakes and be an All Black.
Well, and it builds the All Blacks, you know.
Isn't it terrifying that we're so lied to? And here's the thing. When I went high-fat and drank raw milk, I thought, I actually, in the back of my mind, thought I was going to have a cardiac arrest because we'd been so propagandized. Did you feel I might be a walking heart attack because I'm now eating this beautiful food?
Okay, Rodney, I went cautiously. Okay, I incrementally, cautiously, over several years, reintroduced. I bumped this up a little bit, and I bumped it up, and all the while, I tested myself. Okay, so once a year, I do that hair tissue testing and see what was going on. But the bigger test was how I felt. Okay, you've always got to relate testing, like your formal tests, to the person sitting in front of you. And the question is, okay, we have these test results, but how does that apply to the person? So if I was looking at these things and was saying, well, Gary's reduced his mercury, okay, his adrenals are working a little bit better, but what's happening? Well, guess what? Gary's heart was coming right. He wasn't getting up as often at night. And he was moving up the ranks in sport. So here I am now in my early 70s, and I have now got multiple Masters World Championships. I've got four of them now, okay? Nobody in the world can beat me at the sports I've chosen to compete in. Now, I thought, I have been having heart problems and other issues. Are they any better? Well, I'll tell you what, I can't believe it. You know, I'm almost back to where I was just a couple of weeks ago. I tuned out a cycling race performance, which on paper and in reality is a all-time career personal best.
And goodness me,
I can't believe it, because I'm over 70. And in addition to that, like last night, I didn't get up. I didn't have to get up to have a pee. Okay, so Rodney, it's working.
Captain Cook and Joseph Banks, when they came to New Zealand, considered the Maori the finest physical specimens they had ever seen in their travels. They found men in their 70s rowing the canoes, the wakas, out to meet them, fast and strong. They were in awe of them. They described them as like athletic gods. And within a few short years, the Maori race was broken. And funnily enough, you and I can see this. It wasn't colonialization. It was sugar, flour, and alcohol.
You're absolutely on the money there. And one of the people who I followed very closely and revered is Dr. Weston Price.
Yes.
Who is a dentist who
yes.
traveled around the world with his wife last century in the, I think, the 1930s, 1940s. Yes. And looked at various populations.
Yes.
And what he did was he looked at the facial structures, the tooth, the dental health and so on of these populations. And very clearly, he also came to New Zealand, looked at, went through Polynesia, Melanesia, and also Australia, looking at the Aborigine. And what he was able to demonstrate very clearly back in those days, where the road went through, where came into the valley where the road went, there was a marked deterioration in not just the dental health, but the actual bone structures of the natives. Where there was no road, they had the most beautiful bone structure and so on. By the way, Samoans and Tongans have traditionally been the strongest boned and the most muscular population anywhere on the planet. Okay. They were just the most amazing specimens. And I'm very proud to say that because my other side of my family, my partner is Samoan, and she's all muscle and beautiful health. Okay. And
the book that he wrote.
Yeah. Yes.
Is Human Nutrition and Physical mm-hmm. Degeneration.
Yes.
It's the greatest book
yep.
I have ever read on health and nutrition.
Yes.
I personally believe he's the only dietitian or nutritionist who approached diet scientifically because he was in a unique period of history,
yes,
where he could travel the world and witness populations who for generations had eaten traditionally a wide range of diets, and he could compare them to the people, as you say, where the road had gone and they were eating a modern diet.
Yes. And Rodney, listeners can go to, they can just Google Nourishing Traditions.
Yes, great book.
They will find the Weston Price Foundation. They'll find the book there. They will find an enormous amount of information about traditional approaches to diet, to nutrition, to eating, to food preparation. And incidentally, the CEO of the Weston Price Foundation is Sally Fallon, who has come to New Zealand a couple of times. I have met her. And she is married to a retired Southland dairy farmer by coincidence.
And
they live in Chicago, but it's a small world. Yeah.
I have had the honor of meeting Sally Fallon and her husband.
Golly gosh, yeah.
And her cookbook, Nourishing Traditions, is rightly a bestseller. It should be in all the schools.
Yeah.
And you know what? I thought she was wrong.
Yes. Well, I was like you. I was cautious.
I was good on the food. And the wonderful thing about eating nourishing food is it's beautiful taste because it's what we're designed to eat. And it's why traditional French cooking is big on sauces and the animal fat. And it's delicious. Why is it delicious? It's because we need it. And everyone says, oh, I just love to eat bacon and eggs or that beautiful gravy on my potatoes and butter. Oh, but I can't, my heart. The doctor said, I can't. It's all bullshit. And her book, but where I thought she was wrong, and damn me for hell, Western A Price, 100%. And then the Western A Price came out against vaccines. And I thought, no, vaccines are the greatest thing, saved millions. And I thought and thought and thought about it with my kids. And I thought, no, on balance, I'm going to go with the experts. To my eternal shame and damnation, I had my kids vaccinated. I'm embarrassed to say I went with the crowd, and the Western A Price Foundation and Sally Fallon were 100% right.
Rodney, on the vaccine thing, and let's relate it to prostate, when we test, we find aluminium in people's testing. Now, we could do a whole session on the whole business of aluminium, by the way, but very briefly, people who have received vaccines tend to show elevated levels of aluminium on a hair tissue mineral analysis test. Farmers also tend to be high in aluminium, and from a variety of sources. Aluminium is added to many fertilizers. It's an anti-caking agent. So there is exposure there, and I could explain more about that. But think of aluminium as being incredibly inflammatory. It is a carcinogen. It is the smoking gun for Alzheimer's. So the whole vaccine thing, whether a vaccine is effective or not, there must be great concern about aluminium, especially in childhood vaccines, because it's injecting even a few milligrams into a child's body, to me, is just really bad to do. Now, they've got rid of mercury, but guess what? They've got aluminium there. Now, aluminium, again, is one of the smoking guns for prostate cancer. Okay? So so just bear that in mind. So you just think of all those elderly people who are being jabbed left, right, and center for, by the way, we don't even know quite what's in the COVID vaccines. Okay? But we do know what's in a lot of the like flu vaccines and other vaccines that are given to the elderly, and aluminium. Well, guess what? Dementia. Think of cancer. Well, think of aluminium. Yeah.
We could talk all day
about this, Rodney.
Went on to the nourishing traditions
diet.
I was like you before that, low fat, low fat, low fat, low fat.
Yeah.
I was peeing constantly, and I used to see a GP regularly, like once a year or whatever, for a checkup.
Yeah.
And she told me, oh, just try and hold on longer. Well,
I'll get infection.
I would try to get on an aeroplane, and I'd always go for a pee first. And I'm like, I know what, I'll get on a plane, fly to Wellington, I won't have a pee until I get to it. God, I'd be tied in a knot on the plane, right, trying to make it.
Yeah.
I got onto Western A Price, I read his book, I read Nourishing Traditions, I learned to cook out of that book. And then I got Julia Child's book and learned to cook well, French food with lots of gravy and sauces. My peeing stopped. I was well, just...
What you mean is that it worked better. It didn't stop.
Yeah. The funny thing is, I've made an error of life because out of that book, I learned to bake bread.
Yeah.
And I now eat too much bread. And so I've cut that out and I'm feeling a lot better. Not cut it out, controlled it. Because I could eat bread all day. And I think because I put on butter on it, it's healthy. But there's a limit to any carbohydrate that you should be eating.
Rodney, if I look at my journey, it's been the best part of a 20-year journey.
Mm.
These improvements are very incremental, very, very subtle, and they don't happen overnight. One of the things which I think has brought about my next step in improvement, despite my age, is that I have almost cut out all of the grains, almost entirely now. And the meat and three veggies is the key, the Western price approach.
And fat. So. And the fat.
I have no hesitation in consuming fat. And but it's got to be from, you are what you eat. Now, one of the things we must bear in mind is that a lot of the research on meat and dairy and that sort of thing, first of all, I think is probably a little bit biased by whoever's funding these things. But the other thing is that if you've ever spent any time in Northern Europe, North America, Asia, you will find that the eggs and the butter and the dairy, the milk and so on, the meat, it's not the same as the stuff that we were raised on in New Zealand. Okay?
We have got God's garden here.
Well, and we're quickly losing it if we're not careful, but that's another subject.
Yes. By the way, when you're drinking that raw milk and you go back to supermarket milk, I actually spit it out. I can't drink it.
Well, life's about compromise, Rodney, and we've lost our raw milk, unfortunately. So what we look for is, first of all, A2 protein.
Yes.
Not homogenized.
Yes.
And full cream.
Full cream. There you go.
So it's a compromise.
We do that. The loss of the raw milk. Government did that to us. Government that is there supposedly for us, to look after us, we think of government. And we think of it as having our best interests and experts.
Mm.
I regarded government
before
I went into politics and while I was in government as incompetent. Very, very clever people working in government, the most clever people I've ever met. The CEOs were some of the most able people I've ever come across in my life. They've spent years learning their craft.
Yeah.
But I regarded it as incompetent and bumbling. And that's why I thought we've got to just get government out of our lives. Since COVID, I regard government as my enemy. That it's opposed to my health, my family's health. It's opposed to my well-being and my family's well-being. And it's opposed to the interests of my community. And it cares nothing for our well-being, and we are on our own with an enemy.
I came in at a late stage, Rodney, to help set up the accident compensation scheme.
Oh, really?
Yes. I was recruited to set up their sport and recreation injury prevention, treatment, and rehabilitation programs.
Mm-hmm.
That was during the the mid late 70s. And I was truly a public servant. Okay, I was there to serve the public. And we listened to people. We were there to help, to provide service. And I feel that the government, the public service, definitely nowadays, is not there to serve the people.
There you go.
Something has gone very wrong.
Well, but we have sadly, Gary Moller, run out of time.
Yes.
We could talk, and I'm sure people could listen for quite a long time about a great range of topics.
Yes.
I keep diverting you from prostate health. I apologize to listeners and to you. People can find more from you at your webpage, which is GaryMoller.com. Am I correct?
Yes, that's right.
Gary Moller, MOLLER.com. If listeners want to listen to what I regard as one of my all-time favorite interviews, they can listen not to Gary Moller, but to his wonderful sister, Lorraine Moller, where she opened up about her life and her running, which I think was my most blessed interview. So there you go. The Mollers feature on our show. An amazing family. Gary, it's been a great pleasure having you on. Let's not make it so long next time.
Well, Rodney, just one last thing. There will be an article published on my blog, GaryMoller.com, outlining in detail measures to maintain or to achieve and to maintain a healthy prostate and bladder.
There you go. Well, it's timely advice, literally, because I'm busting to go for a wee. Gary, that was great. Everyone, you're on Reality Check Radio. Send me text 2057, email us, inbox at realitycheck.radio. It's always a pleasure talking to Gary. I feel as though I lost him to other hosts on RCR, and I want him back because he's amazing. We are truly blessed on this great radio station for our supporters, for our listeners, and for our guests. Truly blessed.
Are you loving what you're hearing? Well, the establishment hates it, and right now they're conjuring up new ways to try and censor RCR. To ensure you never miss a beat of the hard-hitting news you've come to know and love, make sure you're on the RCR mailing list. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.